Hello and welcome to the Healthcare Leaders Podcast. Today is the first episode in a brand new series where we go behind the scenes to speak to patients and healthcare professionals in the hope of understanding how the changing digital landscape and the rising power that a patient has over their own decision making when it comes to healthcare is influencing a change in online behaviour. The hope is that a better understanding of patient behaviour will allow us to improve our approach to healthcare communications. And for our inaugural episode, Medico's founder and managing director, Ollie Capel, speaks to Sanjay Vyas, a consultant gynecologist and recognised expert in advanced laparoscopic surgery. It's a great conversation to get your ears into, and it's a rare opportunity to get inside the mind of a healthcare professional who, working throughout many decades, has witnessed a huge evolution in the changing landscape of communication, both from company to healthcare professional and also company and healthcare professional to patient. So without further ado, Ollie and Sanjay.
This is the Healthcare Leaders Podcast by Medico Digital, leading the conversation on healthcare marketing.
Today I'm joined by consultant gynecologist, Mr. Sanjay Vyas, who was former consultant at Southmead Hospital, Bristol for over two decades, and also the former president of the British Society of Gynecological Endoscopy, BSGE. Interesting anecdote for those listeners out there. Sanjay was also Medico's first client way back when we started in 2015. So delighted to have you back here and contributing to this topic. Sanjay is recognised nationally for his expertise in laparoscopic surgery and pelvic ultrasound, and he's going to provide us with an insider's view of some of the most effective educational resources and digital tools as we examine the current state of pharma marketing and ask some tough questions about what we can do better. We'll explore strategies and solutions for creating more targeted, meaningful, and impactful marketing that truly supports healthcare professionals in their vital work. So if you're a healthcare professional looking to stay informed, or a pharma marketer seeking to improve your approach, or simply someone who cares about the future of healthcare, hopefully this podcast has some useful insights for you. So welcome, Sanjay. Going to start, just dive straight in. Tell us a little bit about your previous private practice, or practice in general, in fact, and what your kind of go-to sources of information were when you wanted to kind of stay up to date.
Hi, Ollie. Good to speak with you again. So I was appointed as a consultant in 1994, frighteningly, before a lot of people were born, including you. Those days were different. It was a pre-digital age, so we didn't have computers like we do now, pre-internet, pre-mobile phones. So a lot of our interactions were face-to-face then. I mean, put a lot of store by that. You would have pharma representatives coming to see you on a regular basis, and they would be providing us with information on their latest products, the background information to it as well. The marketing was also slightly simplistic in a sense. They inevitably left you with a pen and some post-it notes in the days when you wrote things down. And that was a source of information. The other areas that we would, in a more sophisticated way, that we would use for information were journals. We would all have subscriptions to various journals that we would read. We'd go to libraries to look things up in the latest journals. And then conferences as well, where you hear speakers about presenting the latest results on cutting edge technology, in my particular field, surgery and medication as well, pharma. So quite a broad base, but as I say, most of it face-to-face.
Great. And did you have a particular preferred format that you would obtain new medical information? And specifically, how would you assess the relevancy of and the credibility of that information?
In a sense, you used different methods in different ways. So the pharma rep, for example, would be a short meeting, and they'd come in fully brief with some publications on their products, and then kind of place them in my own thought processes in terms of where they belong. But then the source of the information was what guided you. And I think that that applies even now. So an authoritative body presenting information, such as the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which in my field at the time was the highest ranked authoritative body, would be information that you would absolutely trust. You knew that that had been processed and developed to the highest standards. Since then, again, this is a bit of a historical thing, but of course, the NICE came along since then. The Cochrane collaboration was developed since then. So more sophisticated methods of analyzing information and synthesizing it into guidelines was a new development. And still, I think that process is highly developed, but in terms of healthcare professionals, they would be the go-to places for the most reliable and trustworthy information, because you know that it's gone through a review process to come to its conclusions. And that's what drives practice at the highest level.
So many of those bodies that you just mentioned there, they will have publications, journals, and more so nowadays, they've got online publications. Would you would seek them out specifically for further information, or if you came into contact with those materials, you would inevitably trust those much more than, say, a pharma rep coming to you face to face? Is that right?
Yes, far more, because those sources take a more global view of a condition or a procedure. Whereas the pharma rep comes by definition, and that's accepted on both sides, my side and the pharma rep side. They come with a product that they wish to pursue. And as I say, I think that interaction is becoming more and more sophisticated as well, because pharma reps are aware that with the explosion in information, healthcare practitioners are aware of a whole range of medications or products, and the rep then has to put his or her product within the context of what is available rather than just pushing one. So we've become much more sophisticated consumers, and I think the challenge for industry is to be able to position their offerings within that more sophisticated marketplace that we are aware of.
Yes, absolutely. So to take the British Society for Gynecological Endoscopy, for example, or one of those other bodies, would you, in terms of the formats of materials that they would provide, obviously that there's been an increase in digital usage over the last few years. For your own personal preferences, would you rely on information that's provided in printed format, or would you go on to the websites and find information that way that was particularly useful?
I think there's, again, a huge change. The printed format is all but gone now for me. It's all on the computer. Whether I access it through original publications, going to PubMed to do a search, and then getting down to source publications, or using the BSGE, the Specialist Society, or the Royal College website to get the more developed guidelines. But the other space that I think is completely new is webinars, where this is something that the British Society of Gynecology does really well, presenting authorities in a particular field in the format of a webinar. And at its best, that can be an interactive process as well, which actually has a huge amount of educational validity and strength, and makes it much more interesting and engaging. That's where, if you look at it from the point of pharma and industry, sponsoring a webinar that looks at a condition or a procedure where they have an offering is a really strong way to position their product, I think, rather than just, you know, prescribe drug X or use gadget Y. So I think that's a new development, and I'm a real fan of that.
So I'm just trying to ascertain, I guess, how you would come into contact. So would you be often with a webinar, for example, you'd be maybe invited to that webinar via an email that might arrive in your inbox, or you would go on the website and see that they were running a webinar or it's in a publication that they're promoting it, and then you would sign up specifically. Is that right?
Both. So the BSG is a membership organization, and when they've scheduled a webinar, that email goes out to all members, so you're aware that it's coming up, and then you can sign up for that. And it'll also be put up on their website as an announcement for what's coming up.
Okay. And you would generally find that the topic of content was relevant, it was timely to the types of patients that you were seeing in practice, those sorts of things?
Yes. And I think the other thing is it allows the BSG and situations where it's sponsored to make sure that the topic is timely and it adds to what is known already. So often deals with new developments or new thoughts on a disease or new knowledge on origin or treatment. So it's not, it doesn't replicate a publication in a journal of a paper, which is a scientific study. It's a more kind of general presentation and discussion.
Yeah. Okay. So within their industry now, particularly within agency world and pharma, there's a lot of talk about omni-channel communications, which effectively, if you boil it down, is delivering really relevant, timely information to that healthcare professional at the point of care. So supporting them in their healthcare decision-making and using the different channels that they would frequently use to make sure that they're getting that message in a format that they easily understand, can access, is digestible. For you, would you say that within your practice, it was much more of a case of seeking out that information yourself by looking at those membership body websites, just being aware and understanding, or would you find that actually pharma would do a good job of getting in front of you with the right message at the right time?
I think that the phrase omnichannel kind of raises concern for me. It sounds like I'm going to be bombarded by pharma through, you know, all my ways of being accessed, and that actually it can be very intrusive, and I think would be hugely counterproductive. I think the balance has to be between pharma industry coming to me and me going somewhere to find out about what I need to learn about drugs or services and gadgets and things, you know, the equipment. That balance is more finely tuned now than being bombarded.
I think that's so important, just respecting your own privacy and supporting you when you're in that time of need, rather than trying to predict when you might be at that time of need and give you information that might not be relevant at that particular time, and uses that those personal channels. And I think it kind of segues quite nicely into what I wanted to talk about next in terms of digital and social media usage. And I wanted to kind of talk about specifically in your own personal and professional life, are there any specific kind of mainstream social media channels that you use? So for example, at the moment, there's a bit of a growing trend with TikTok. There's apparently 4 million active healthcare professionals using TikTok for not just posting information, but also finding healthcare information. And I just wanted to get your take on specifically which channels you use, both personally and professionally, and which of those from a professional point of view are effective.
think it was a function of my age than anything else. I don't have a social media presence, so I'm not on Facebook or TikTok. I've seen a few TikTok things, mainly through family. We do it for fun and enjoy. My daughters show me things that are fun. But my concern about that sort of communication is that there is no kind of kite marking or quality assurance process that goes with it. It's so easy for everyone to put something on Facebook or Instagram and so on, and put up a little TikTok video together. But it has to pass a quality threshold for it to be useful. And this applies to healthcare professionals as well as patients. I think that there's a huge amount of information that I get told about my patients that they find on social media, which just does not pass the smell test for me, you know. And just because it's on social media does not make it a fact. Just because somebody says so on TikTok does not make it a fact. And I think that we need to develop certain levels of skepticism about stuff that's put on there. And equally as much, I think organizations that seek to inform healthcare professionals and patients have a massive responsibility to make sure that they continue to practice to the highest levels of evidence-based medicine. And sadly, I think that does get diluted at times.
100% agree. Let's circle back in a minute to the kind of patient side of communications, because I think that's an interesting area to explore. But if we stick with your professional practice and information, if, for example, NICE, and I just had to fact check this because I didn't know if they did or not, they don't as far as I can see, had a TikTok page. They do have a Facebook page. They do leverage YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, on form now X. If you were to see information posted by them on any of those channels, would you engage with that content? Would you find that useful and helpful?
I think I might use them as a means to signpost me to what the source document was. So I wouldn't go to any of those with a question. You know, they would just be used as signposts for me.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, that makes perfect sense. I guess from your perspective, do you see them as a potential kind of mechanism to communicate with other healthcare professionals? So, for example, there's quite a lot of in terms of online communities, Twitter or X, there's quite an active community of cardiologists on there. Are you aware of any kind of other online gynecology communities that use social media channels at all? I mean, it sounds as though you've got a little bit of skepticism towards social media, which is quite understandable. But from a professional perspective, you don't think that that's something that could be useful for your private practice or your practice in general in terms of delivering content?
Yes, I am part of an online community of gynecologists that's hosted by the AAGL, the American Association of Gynecological Laparoscopists. That is very interesting. It's where people post interesting clinical questions of complex cases, opinions, and so on. And that is useful of interest, but it's an online community that I've signed into. And I suppose if you remove my skepticism and go to, if such a thing is possible, on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and have an online community that you sign into where the rules of engagement are clear, that you'll only be talking about clinical matters, and also that whatever opinion is put forward is itself fact checked by the author and an element of peer review as well for accuracy, and where possible, where needed, to say that there is no known, we don't have a full guideline on situation X, but my opinion on the basis of my experience is that we should do X, Y, or Z. And that sort of information sharing is helpful. It actually is only a digital extension of what happened in the old days when I was a young surgeon. If I had questions, or a young obstetrician in the field of women's health, if I had a case that I wanted advice on, I'd wander down the corridor and ask a colleague. I suppose the digital platforms allow me to ask many, many, many more colleagues all around the world. But at the same time, I need to know that those colleagues are trustworthy, as I would have done by walking down the corridor. And yeah, so some amount of policing is needed. You know, some amount of rule obeying has to take place. It can't just be a space where people can shout loudly and expect that to carry.
Yeah, so if I can surmise that, it's a closed or gated community where it is just professionals or healthcare professionals. That is the community. The rules of engagement are clearly laid out, like you said. That's something that you would feel comfortable engaging in discourse about a clinical matter, but you leveraging a mainstream social media platform like Facebook to but beyond signposting would be not something that you would look to do in terms of just having any discourse around clinical practice.
No, I wouldn't, although I can see the commercial benefits of doing that. This is, you know, it'd be quite easy. And I know I can see several examples of people who become Facebook based practitioners, medical practitioners, and that would give them a commercial advantage in terms of private practice. So I can see that, and I can see that that's just another form of advertising. But I think it's important that it is seen to be that rather than them being authoritative people to be giving out information for patients.
I think if I recall back a few days ago, there was in fact a guest from the States, obviously, who was known as the king or queen of gynecology just because of their social media following. And you see it an awful lot. You can really build your own personal brand on social media platforms by having that kind of discourse online. But whether it's appropriate or not, having kind of clear guidance and boundaries in place, it is a grey area, and we see an awful lot of it. And I think there's an interesting piece there around the type of the age and demographic of those types of healthcare professionals. So much more established, kind of slightly older generation consultants don't tend to engage in that type of online content, but much younger generation who've kind of grown up with it, or that those kind of up and comers really do. And I don't know if you've kind of experienced that yourself.
No, I'm aware of the example you've given. And I think that the marketplace is much more complex. When I was your first client, for your company, I asked you to build me a website, and the website was there as the shop window into my private practice. There was certain information about me, there was information about the conditions I treated and what I did, and my contact information. It was my shop window. That's what you mailed to me, and it was wonderful. The social media place now means that it seems to me that the healthcare practitioners in that space have now become commercial players on social media. So I'm not nearly as up to speed as you are on this, but I'm aware that it's possible to generate significant income by just being in social media, depending on the number of followers you have and so on. That at that point, I think the social media platform has stopped being the shop window for the practitioner. It's become a commercial end in itself, and that's, I think, a new phenomenon. And I suppose, in a sense, they're becoming media personalities just as the TV doctors were and still are. You know, that's their area of practice. Whether they practice clinical medicine and whether that is a significant source of income for them, I don't know. But my suspicion is that the social platform presence is what might be generating income. So if I was a king of gynecology on TikTok, you know, I suspect that would lead to significant income for me.
Yeah, not only through the patient inquiries that you get, through additional revenue streams through some of those social media platforms themselves, like TikTok, if will play content creators, they'll reimburse them for creating that content once you reach a certain size of audience. And it did, yeah, that very much dawned on me a few years ago, that kind of that shift that took place from, you talked about the website being very much the shop window, and it was, but we worked with a cosmetic surgeon a little while back, relatively renowned in London, who had not got a website for many years because they had built up their own following on Instagram and done very well with it. In fact, I think they had something like 90, 100,000 followers. And the commercial value of that following became very evident very quickly when we did build them a website, and all we did was put up a holding page. It literally had their name and their logo and a contact form. It had no presence online. There's no way to search for it. It was just basically a very basic holding page. And as soon as it went live, the inquiry form was just going off every other minute with inquiries. And that was because this individual had built such an established following on social media. So yeah, from the patient side, I think it's got massive commercial benefits if you can really raise your personal brand on there. But whether or not, and how you do that, if that is the best route to raising your kind of private practice, I'm not so sure about. So this again segues quite nicely. So there's been a big increase in health information online, and many people are very concerned about that. And I'm sure that you had that in your own individual practice. You'd see patients who were coming to you very informed, no doubt finding information, not just on Google, but on social media channels. So how did you guide patients in distinguishing credible sources and misinformation? Were there any kind of real common patient misconceptions or educational gaps that you would find within in gynecology and women's health specifically?
The challenge as a healthcare practitioner with their information and knowledge that they had gathered before they walk into the room, and then sift through that and personalize it for the patient. And that's the biggest challenge. And there are occasions there where, you know, patients, and I know from my own examples, you know, if I have a headache and I go online to look at sources of headache, I know that I will inevitably self-diagnose brain cancer, and it's easy to fall into that trap. We tend to want to agree with whatever's presented to us, and then to talk out of that scenario can be a challenge, and that's where the communication skills for the health practitioner have to come to the fore, and that's the one side of it. The other side of it, this is where, again, I think the interaction with patients is changing all the time and has to become more sophisticated. But the patients, too, I think, need, and I think we're moving into that phase with social media now. I think the general public are developing a degree of skepticism with what they see and hear. There have been a lot of, in outside the medical field, tragedies that were driven by social media. And I think the population is becoming aware that that social media does carry a risk of harm, and everything there isn't absolutely gospel. So the question you asked is what are to deal with, and what we have to deal with is taking a general level of information that the patient walks into the room with and making it more personal for the individual patient, and then discussing options for the future with the patient, and then coming to an agreed sort of partnership type treatment plan or no treatment plan, or whatever the next step is. And that's where the challenge is personalizing it.
Absolutely. And I can imagine that's only exacerbated when you've got particularly sensitive topic areas like contraception or menopause, fertility, those sorts of areas where there is just a lot of noise. There's a lot of user-generated content, a lot of patients on online forums talking about their own symptoms and giving advice to other patients. So I can appreciate how difficult that must be to navigate. Just bringing that back a bit, just in terms of your own interactions with pharma and device manufacturers, are there any specific kind of promotional or disease awareness campaigns that you've noticed recently that you think have had particular stopping power? So in the patient space, I think of Hertility, who've been doing some notable advertising campaigns across a range of different formats. Are there any other kind of companies in the medical space that you can think of that are of note within that side of things?
Dealing with erectile infants, you know, Viagra and others and all the others. And amazing to see them advertised on television. What they've done there is taken this sort of unspoken behind closed doors topic and opened it up, you know, in I think a hugely sensitive way, at the same time raising awareness of their own products. I'm quite impressed by this. In another area is dealing with urinary incontinence. Again, that's being done hugely well by companies who produce, you know, incontinence products. So that's been done well, I would say. And I think it's the sensitive way in which taboo subjects have been opened up to discussion, and people then hopefully feel more empowered to go and seek help for conditions that they may have. Devices manufacturers, I think, have a difficult job. I think access to healthcare professionals now is more and more limited by our employers. In a sense, it's the employers, the hospitals, the trusts want to look for devices that are economical. The financial driver is massive now. And the ability for individual healthcare practitioners to pick and choose amongst the devices is hugely limited. And the device, any new device coming to market, has to demonstrate significant improvement on existing products to get a foothold. And they have to come through procurement departments just to access us. And I think they've got a really uphill task. And that speaks to what we were talking about earlier on, is, you know, what channel would they use? And I think that webinars and hands-on examples, so taking practitioners out using simulation technology, which is another new field for the use of devices, give surgeons experience with their products on simulators or meeting other users. And that, again, it take us back right to the beginning, is a world away from the days when usually, either a man or a woman, as a devices representative, would come along and say, "Mr. Viers, have you seen the latest pair of forceps that we are releasing to market next week?" And we're a world away from that now. And for the better.
Yeah. So let's, conscious of timing, let's try to wrap this up with this final question for you. If I am a device manufacturer or a pharma company, and I'm looking to target a gynecologist in today's world, what would be, from your perspective, what do you think is the best way to get in front of those audiences? With what types of content? You mentioned webinars and things like that, but if you were going to give some advice to a healthcare, a pharma marketer in today's world, what is the best way to engage with a gynecologist based on some of the kind of standout interactions you've had, either face-to-face or digital, in the past?
I'd say start by looking at it from the healthcare practitioner's point of view. Define what separates your product from what is available in the market already. Give me some more information about how it benefits patients more than what's available. put an economical context on it, because we are no longer able to spend effectively taxpayers' money in the health service or people's own money in private practice without an understanding of the economic consequences of that, and then approach us in a way and at a time when we are receptive. So bombarding isn't useful anymore. We've talked about webinars, we've talked about hosting training opportunities or discussional spaces. I think partner with organizations that we trust. I think the specialist societies are becoming massively important in this. And the response, the relationship that healthcare practitioners have with their specialist societies is getting stronger and stronger, and they're seen as trusted sources. So partner with them to come to us resist the temptation to bombard us with easily accessed social media. I think that would prove to be hugely counterproductive.
I think that's great advice. And I'm guessing the other one there that gets really, really badly violated is email, although it has its usage. But partner with credible memberships, associations, societies, like you say, where there is already that trust, and put it in front of you at a time that's not invasive when you're in practice rather than at home. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely so. Yeah. Meet me in my professional space. Interesting, you mentioned email. I mean, you know, almost every time I see that sort of an email, I might just look at the top line, and at that point, the only emotion that can generate in me is irritation before I press the delete button.
I mean, to be fair to everyone else out there, we all get spam emails, and we all have to do an awful lot of that.
With patient education generally, there are lots of different channels, as we discussed. There are for healthcare professionals, there's also lots of different channels for getting in front of patients, probably more so. Are there any specific channels that you think are underutilized at the moment for raising awareness of conditions, just disease education in general?
Yes, I think there is. It's the development of digital technology away from websites and the screen to podcasts. I'm increasingly aware in my own life and my friends and family of the power of the podcast. And in the past, we used to exchange TV programs to watch and have you seen. Now we go on to say, have you listened to X, Y, and Z? And I think the podcast is an enormously powerful tool for patient information. As we've mentioned before, the source and the veracity of the source is hugely important. And I think there's an empty space at the moment for the development of podcasts where authorities in people of particular expertise in disease states and conditions and treatments are interviewed and asked to present what they know in podcast format for patients to hear. And the credentials and the credibility of the presenter will speak for themselves and cut away from a lot of the noise that may be available and may be coming through on social media.
I think that's a great insight. There you go, farm marketers. That's one for you to take home. I think there are lots of opportunities to have more audio-based content for users. There are some very specific condition-based podcasts that exist out there. I'm aware of that. But in respect of particular therapy areas, there's not a real standout that I can think of. That means there may well be. So if anyone does that, please let us know. But I think you're right. I think people consume information really well through audio, and podcasts are a great way to do that. Hence why we're doing this podcast today. So
thank you so much, Sanjay, for all of your insights today. That's been massively valuable, and I think you will have opened the eyes and certainly kind of got rid of some misconceptions around some of the ways in which you should and can be getting in front of healthcare professionals for us marketers out there. Been a really, really interesting guest to have on. So just want to thank you very much for your time. And if you've got any passing comments for our listeners, please let me know.
Thanks, Robbie. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sanjay. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Lovely. Cheers, Ollie. Bye.
The Healthcare Leaders Podcast. For more specialist advice on creating digital marketing which gets results, visit medicodigital.co.uk.